All right, welcome everyone to the July 28th Hyperledger Technical Steering Committee call. As you are all aware, two things that we must abide by. The first is the antitrust policy notice that is displayed on the screen. And the second is our code of conduct. So as we move down the agenda, we have our standard announcement. The Dev Weekly Developer Newsletter, I'm doing this from memory, goes out each Friday. If you have something that you would like to add to that, please consider clicking on the link, and there's a wiki page where you can add your comments. If somebody wouldn't mind, whoever's sharing their screen, scrolling down on the agenda, thank you so much. Any other announcements that anybody has? Arun?
Thanks, Tracy. So Julian Gordon, VP for Asia Pacific at Hyperledger, is currently visiting India. And there are a couple of events planned. So he's in India for a week now. And this Saturday, there is a public meetup event in Bangalore. So if anybody is around or if you know somebody in Bangalore, please let them know about the event. And yeah, it will be an in-person event.
All right, thanks, Arun, for sharing. Anybody else have any announcements? Okay, if there's no other announcements, we did get in the Hyperledger Sawtooth quarterly report. There was a slight glitch with our project calendar reporting. It was supposed to be Sawtooth, not Transact. I think last week we had Transact on the list, but Andy let me know that it was supposed to be Sawtooth. She got the reminder for Sawtooth, not the reminder for Transact. Looking at the calendar, I did see that those two got reversed for some reason in this quarter. So I fixed that. We did get the Sawtooth report. Please take the time to review it. I didn't see any additional comments coming through other than the ones I made, but does anybody have any comments on the Sawtooth report? Okay, I know a lot of us haven't had the opportunity to review that yet, since it did just come in yesterday. Please take the opportunity to review that. I will leave it on the meeting agenda for next week in case anything comes up that we need to discuss. Next week, we have coming due the Hyperledger Aries and the Hyperledger Indy reports. So if you know anybody in those projects, please feel free to remind them that they have that coming due. With that, as far as I know, we don't have any TSC business to discuss this week, but does anybody have anything that we should be bringing up to discuss? Arun?
Sure, Tracy. I think I pasted similar comments on the TSC group as well sometime back, and ties back to what kind of projects should we attract and what should we do to get those projects incubated under Hyperledger Labs or Hyperledger. How do we invite those collaboration? And I don't know, maybe we can open it up for comments, and then if not now, at least sometime in future.
And does this relate, Arun, do you think, to the project gaps task force that Deno has been leading, or is this something else?
Sure, we can consider them as part of the task force as well. And I think the task force is aimed at identifying the gaps, but does it also aim at how do we collaborate or bring in those kind of projects, or how do we start those projects?
When I put the objectives out, I think the collaboration and the bringing in is the next step. So I think it's two-phase. So yeah, I think it does feed from the task force, the project gaps task force results, but I think it would be a separate task force, actually more than a task force, an ongoing thing to outreach to projects we think that would be positive for Hyperledger. So I think it stems from it, but I don't think we should limit it to the task force activities.
Okay, thanks, Nano. And Arun, are there certain projects that you think would be worthwhile to approach at this point? This is why this is coming to your mind?
I see a need for using some of those projects. So that's where the need comes from. And if such thing does not exist anywhere, and if others are also willing to, show an interest, then that could be an initiation of how we take that forward, right? Or where to find similar, if many people have similar interests, maybe that could be an initiation. So yeah, I was hoping for those kind of discussions to happen at some point.
Okay, I think two things there. One, obviously after the Project Gaps Task Force, we can talk through projects that might fit the gaps that we discover, right, during that task force. And then secondly, let's see what we can do if you have certain projects you already have in mind to get that list together so that we can have a more focused sort of conversation. All right. So with that, any other discussion items before we move on to the security task force? All right, seeing a coffee, which says I'm away on the screen here. So Arun, I think you're supposed to be driving us through the security task force today. Hoping you're not really away. All right, sounds like maybe he is. Is there anybody else on the security task force who might be able to let us know current status and what we're discussing today? All right, looks like maybe Arun, you're back.
Hey, Tracy, sorry, I got disturbed. It was an emergency call. What was the topic I missed probably?
Yeah, so I think we're at the point where we're ready to go through the security task force.
All right. So from the previous call that we had at the TSC, I think one of the feedback that we strongly received was that these recommendations are fine, but what are we doing about? I think I'm sharing the right screen, right?
I'm seeing a black screen with a line down the middle.
Same thing.
Oh, it says my screen is paused and it's asking me to resume, but when I click on resume, nothing happens.
Is there a wiki page or something that I should share?
Sure, I'll. That's the task force recommendation page. Right. So one of the strong feedback that we received in previous TSC call was that we needed concrete proposals and not recommendations. And we needed plan of actions that as a TSC, we can ask projects to start implementing. And since then, we got to meet for once. And next August 2nd, we have the next meeting. But if you scroll down to the bottom, I think in the previous call, we were trying to come up with a concrete proposal for one of the action item. So the first point, I'll probably skip that every project to have a security representative. I guess we already added that in our project requirement for any project to even incubate, we need that as a requirement. And the second point that is put up over here in terms of concrete proposal. So this is related to addressing CVEs on a timely fashion. And the recommendation over here is we definitely don't want to be pushy for all the CVEs, but at least for the critical ones. And the definition of criticality goes with the score that's associated with it. So at least for the ones that are highly coming up, which are more critical, which are easy to discover. And these are the factors that will determine if a CVE is critical. And to be objective onto it, it can be considered as anything that is having a score of greater than or equal to 7. And the proposals over, I mean, the goal over here is to avoid any such things being left out without fixing them for a long time. And we treat them as a highly exploitable ones that are to be addressed sooner. So the proposal is that every project will be issued with a best practice badge. I know, Tracy, you had a comment on that, but I'll probably just I'll complete this and then we'll go with the questions. So the proposal is to have a best practice badge issued to all the projects. And this badge will be issued on a merit basis, and this will be reviewed or reconsidered every quarter based on the project's report that they fill up to the TSC. And when a particular project is incubated, this badge will be awarded to it on the basis that it is incubated, and the badge will remain with the project as long as they retain the status of it. In case if the project is not maintaining the conditions which are set further, then the badge will be revoked. And if a badge is revoked, then the project has to prove that they are following the process again. And they have to prove it for two consecutive quarters following that revocation. So that was the intention. So there is no punitive measures over here. It's all about having that extra badge that gives the confidence to the consumer of that particular project, saying that, hey, this project is pretty much active in considering at least fixing the critical vulnerabilities, right? Ideally, we would like to have all of those to be fixed. And in order to support this, in our quarterly reports, we'll introduce a question that clearly states that if a particular project has any critical vulnerability with a score of, over here it is assumed to be 7, and again, that's open for debate. We can always revise it to another number. So we will ask the question if the score, if they have any CVEs that are not fixed for more than 90 days. And if yes, which are those? And this is on the premise that after 90 days, all the CVEs will be made available public. And of course, there will be consent taken from the project, and project team has to give an explanation for why it should not be reported. So that's an exception process. So the next point actually talks about that extension process and how long such extension can be allowed. Two such extensions can be given, but not more than that. And this entire process itself will take the CVE to be active for more than like close to 3 quarters, right? So that's the next point. And the last point, as I said, it deals with the revocation and the rules for gaining back the badge to be on the normal list. So this was the only concrete proposal that we were able to put up after that call. And the next call is on 2nd. I think I see Dano, Tracy, and Hart raising hands. Dano?
So one of the things to consider in this is that we don't hold all the cards when it comes to CVE reporting. Whoever proposes CVE, they're engaging in a responsible disclosure, an agreement that they won't disclose it after a certain reasonable time. And 90 days is a pretty standard thing unless there's negotiation. But you know, these might be researchers, and after 90 days, they might say, I need to publish a paper, and unless it's going to burn down the internet, I'm going to publish it. So, I mean, we can have these rules to delay publishing the CVEs, but sometimes the project or Hyperledger is not in control of when the CVE gets disclosed. So that's one aspect to consider in this, is we can use all the carrots and sticks we want, but we don't control the destiny on it sometimes.
Okay, thanks for that input, Dano. Hey, Tracy.
Yeah, so I actually have 3 points. Maybe we'll start with my second one, since it kind of relates to what Dano just said. You know, I think in here you mentioned that if yes, please list the CVEs. I think that is a no-no. Just from the perspective of if it truly is a CVE and it hasn't been fixed yet, should we really be reporting it out into a document that is publicly available to anyone? My second point here is I don't know what a score of greater than or equal to 7 actually means. So for those of us who are not familiar with that, maybe we need to be more specific about what it is that 7 reflects. Very much a magic number in my mind. And then the last point that I have is the one that I made in the comments, which is I feel like a badge given to a project that's never had a CVE that says this project is following the best practices for handling CVEs is not accurate, right? I would prefer that if we do this, we have like a never had a CVE type badge and a yes, this project has dealt with all their CVEs within the whatever this 90-day period might look like, right? Or within the time frame that has been agreed with whoever the reporter was. So I think, you know, there's some challenges with claiming you are good at something that you've never done. And then also when you restore the badge, you know, after they've resolved that particular CVE, I think it's not quite right either, because we still don't know that they're good at dealing with CVEs within the amount of time that have been specified. So I just feel like we need to be a bit more robust in how we're issuing these badges and when we're revoking these badges and when we're reissuing the badges.
Thanks, Tracy. Should I answer or I'll probably go with the round robin fashion? Hey, Art.
Hey, thanks. Yeah, great points, Tracy and Dano. I do want to, it wasn't clear to me whether we were still by default releasing CVEs after 90 days. I think, you know, the automatic release without a petition to the TSC is a good thing. As Dano points out, you know, a lot of CVEs are found by researchers and other people that that have incentives to release them. In particular, we've even seen some CVEs brought by competitors that have, you know, lots of financial incentives to release CVEs on Hyperledger stuff. So you can guarantee that they're going to get released, you know, as soon as the minimum window is, you know, is reached. So, you know, I think by default, you know, we should be releasing CVEs after 90 days. You know, and I also wonder, you know, about the scoring. You know, the scoring is always a little bit subjective. So I'd worry that that could be gamed a little bit. You know, so if this were, you know, totally up to me, I would just say, well, let's release all CVEs in 90 days. You know, sort of no matter what happens, you know, unless people ask for a TSC. And if something is very minor, you know, well, maybe you can release it if it's not totally fixed, right? But, you know, that sort of addresses the point here, which is we want people addressing, you know, high severity CVEs, you know, but we should also be transparent about the less severe CVEs. So I'd prefer like a mandatory release policy, because I think in practice we're going to have to pretty much do that anyway, and there's no reason to hold these back. I'd be curious to hear what everyone thinks about that.
Thanks, Hart. Hi, Arnon.
Yes, hi guys, and I apologize I missed the call the task force. Since it's the reschedule, I don't have it on my agenda. I need to fix this. I actually meant to attend. But so my point on this is that, in fact, a bit of follow-up to what Dano and Hart said. The openSSF recommendation is that you should try to engage with the reporter and try to negotiate the time frame for the disclosure. And as you know, Hart and Dano said, I mean, they may have their own, you know, timeline, and the experience shows that in fact they are not always nice players, and you know, it might be because there is competitive incentives, but there may be all sorts of reasons why people don't necessarily want to respect, you know, to give you enough time to fix the issue. And so that's the reality we're dealing with. It's to the point where OpenSSF is actually now planning on developing a guide for reporters. And it's well understood that they may ignore it, of course, but the thought is that maybe if, you know, we give them an insight as to what it's like to be on the other side, they might be more amenable to negotiating rather than forcing their own schedule on the project, which sometimes can be quite challenging, right? You have to figure out whether this is real, you have to be able to reproduce it, you have to figure out the fix. And this may, even with all good intentions from the project, it may still quite, you know, take quite some time. And so I think it's important here to take that into account. And I agree with Dano that, you know, just saying, oh, it's 90 days. Well, in some cases, they may be, you know, agreeable to making it longer if, you know, it's a really hard problem to solve, and they might accept to give you more time. And other cases, they may just say, well, screw you, I'm going to release it next week, and you just have to live with it. So I think I think our policy needs to reflect that, you know, this is not cast in stone, and it is dependent on the reporter and their willingness to negotiate or not.
Thanks, Arnold. That was an option we did not know about. Thanks for that. Hey, Troy.
Hey, so just a few thoughts. I think the first thought is, you know, part of this proposal sounds a little bit like information gathering and better transparency. Another part is this, the badge concept. And, you know, I'm curious, you know, I'm curious, you know, if the badge part is an important aspect of this, or just the idea that there should be some easily discoverable information about the CVE stats for a project. So I think, you know, maybe if the focus was on the more of the transparency aspect and not so concerned about, you know, rule setting about badging, that might be easier to get started. And my other thought is about, you know, projects like Ares that have less and more mature sub-projects within them, a badging exercise like this might be fairly difficult, right? Whereas, you know, stats gathering would probably be easier. So those are my thoughts here.
Thanks, Roy. Okay, I think we have so many questions to discuss and debate about. So I'll probably start with you, Troy. So the intention is not to have a badge, but the intention is to have it easily consumable and probably incentivize projects to do their best so that the consumers of that project, they feel confident about the project, right? So that's the intention behind it. So badge is probably the easily conveyable an idea for somebody who's just looking into project and they want to know, hey, can I trust this project, or is the project maintained to the standards that we expect? And if there are other recommendations apart from badging, then it's welcome those as well. And probably this ties back to the idea that Tracy was talking about, that we may not be good with single type of badge because of certain reasons, that when a project is incubated, they have not done any best practices. It's just that they're starting to work in an open source community. So they may not be, they may not have exposed to certain scenarios which other projects might have already been exposed. Maybe that all their maintainers are occupied doing something else. So I completely agree on that aspect. So if not a best practice in terms of CVE, we can always say that the project is good for last 2 quarters, right? In terms of how they are managing their CVEs. So that can be a badge. And that badge definition can go by saying that the project is in good shape for the last 2 quarters, and it's given through these reports and other means. And either it had no CVEs reported or it's following its best to address them. So that can be the badge. I mean, and again, it can be badge or it can be any other means of conveying that message. And to another point that spoke about extensions and the minimum, I mean, disclosing it after minimum number of days that are, that's an interesting aspect. And also, I guess that ties back to what Arnott said in terms of negotiating with the person who has raised that, who has issued that CVE, right? So I have added that as a comment in the notes. I think the page is not in edit mode. That's why it's not showing up, but we will discuss that in the task force call to see if we need to do anything. For now, I think disclosing at after 90 days without having any extensions, because some of them, as you said, is not in our control, it makes sense. And we can put that up. And I'm not sure if projects would be happy to do it, though. At least from a process point of view, we can state that. And what else? Did I miss any point?
Just from my point, projects like Aries, which are more client frameworks and not blockchains, have multiple projects within them. So these proposals tend maybe not to address that issue that something like Aries may have a very very fresh sub-project versus, you know, a more long-running sub-project. And it's fairly difficult to have this global rule just for, like, say, something like Aries across the board.
I agree. So each repository or each project within Aries is considered as independent one, like, that's what you mean?
Yeah. There's, like, several different frameworks of completely different maintainers, right? So it's more challenging with that kind of framework project than, like, say, the blockchain projects to have a kind of a global scope like this.
Got it. Hey, Art, I see you raising
that. Yeah, I mean, Troy's point makes sense, but there's no reason we couldn't do this sub-project by sub-project, right? I mean, ultimately, we still want to, you know, indicate to folks, like, you know, whether people are following best security practices or not. And if we need to do it sort of like repo by repo or sub-project by sub-project, you know, I don't see why that would be an issue. Would that satisfy some of your concerns, Troy?
Yeah, I mean, I guess we have to start identifying that a little bit better. But I mean, I think part of my point was just, I think the information and transparency thing is easier than, you know, trying to adjudicate badging is just my personal thought as well. So
yeah, I totally agree with you.
Nathan.
I would agree that the repo transparency thing doesn't go away with this. I wonder if maybe there's something that would actually help general project discovery if we had the maintainers group repositories and say, these things are all part of one whole, and these things are all each kind of standalone, maybe because they're different implementations of the same protocol, or because they're, you know, maybe different plugins that are on, that sit on top of the core. And so a vulnerability in one doesn't necessarily reflect on the others. It feels like that organization and that making that hierarchy more visible would help with both the badging and in making the project more approachable.
So did I think going by that, right? So if so, the, so for the things which we use as a library, as a dependency, sometimes we see that, hey, this particular framework has an issue, but only in this programming language or so, right? That's one consideration. But again, your question is, how do we show that? How do we showcase that to consumers? Point taken. Thanks, Nathan. Hey, Tracy.
Hi. I think I'd like to really highlight and dig in on Troy's suggestion, because I think it's not coming through. And so maybe if we can state it a different way, which is focus on the data first, right? What is the data that you want to collect about CVEs? And that data is CVE name, date reported, maybe the person who reported it, the date that it was resolved, which would then allow you to calculate, you know, how many days was passed, whether or not that was within the agreed upon days to resolve, right? So maybe that's an initial sort of capture date point of data that you capture, right? Once you get all these points of data that you want to capture about a CVE, then you can decide what type of badges, right? And maybe it's, you know, here's a couple of SQL statements or whatever you want to call to say, like, this is the data that you would need to see what the average amount of time it was to resolve CVEs for this project, this repo, this whatever it is that we're talking about, right? This is the, number of times that the CVE was resolved within the agreed upon time frame. All of these sorts of data is available then to you after you get that data collected. And from there, you can decide what the badges are. So I think Troy's suggestion is really good. And so I want to see if we can focus, instead of on badges, what is the data that we need in order to determine whether or not a project is doing good in resolving their CVEs?
Thanks, Trace. Excellent point. It makes sense. We need to figure out what kind of data we can collect. I think all the data points that you said should be able, we should be able to get those. And I guess I missed one other point. I think you wanted to understand, how did we come up with the score 7 and what does that really indicate? So score 7, as you said, for now is a magical number. So we just considered that anything greater than 7 to be critical. But again, we can change it, right? So that was a proposal. And we had that in mind when writing this proposal. And I think Raya is sharing the screen. And whenever somebody reports an issue, they will have to fill through or answer a list of questions. And so it's a pre-set list of questions, in the sense that we have to know, like, how much of a weightage am I giving for each of these aspects of that issue? And based on what a particular reporter is saying, the calculator, like, it determines the score of that particular CVE. And once it gets reported, and probably while talking to them, and we can, like, there can be a process which is established, which where a particular maintainer or somebody can go there and talk to them and tell them, hey, I see that you have considered this particular aspect to be high, but from our definitions, because we assume certain things in the project, our security threat model does not consider these cases. So that's where we don't think this is high. So we will change this to, let's say, another value. And that can reduce the score as well. So this score gets calculated through this questionnaire that somebody answers. And one of the recommendations that the task force also had was, since we are dealing with blockchain technology and multi-party systems, if needed, we will bring in additional set of questions into this to have influence on the score that gets calculated. And those additional set of questions could be very specific to blockchain technology. And this at least should work for the core protocol projects that we have, about 6 of them in Hyperledger. Again, that's not imposed on all the projects and the Hyperledger. It's specifically for those.
I also wanted to, or I was showing earlier, for Fabric, we have this public dashboard, which shows the number of reports, our policy, et cetera. And you can dig into this and see how many CVEs, et cetera. So there's more clicking you can do. I will post a link to this in the Discord chat.
And is this scoring, I mean, it's looking at the site, it's GitHub.com. Is this something that is built into GitHub? And if so, how would we go about making those changes that you're suggesting, Arun, about, you know, if there's blockchain specific types of things that would need to be added?
I can answer the first part. This is built into GitHub. What I did for this was I started a draft security advisory on the governance repo. And then just started answering these questions. And once you get a score here, you can go in here and set this yourself. If you want, I'll give you a walkthrough at a later date.
Right. I see Art also raised hand. Hey, Art.
Yeah, I would also take a lot of the CVE scores, the big grain of salt. So for instance, if you have a bug bounty program, you know, everyone wants to extract more money from the program. So they generally, we see that people try to inflate their scores when possible. You know, and that's one thing. On the other hand, if it's like someone from a project reporting a CVE, sometimes they will tend to underreport it. So, you know, we should be careful with the CVE scores, particularly for the bug bounty programs and CVEs that come through that way.
I will say that I spend a lot of time closing basically bogus reports on HackerOne. So Hart's point about overinflated is, yes, very much so.
I think one other question that you had, Tracy, was when we have our own set of questions, how do we consider them and here, right? So that aspect is not explored yet.
What do you want to see on the screen? Recommendations?
Sorry, I think the other question that Tracy had was, and when we bring in our own set of questions, which other than the one that we saw on the GitHub page, how do we consider those in the scoring criteria?
I think that's an open question.
Right. So I would request the TSC and also the maintainers of all the projects to join in the next security task force meeting on Tuesday, because that's really the time where we dig some of these questions into deeper. And we do discuss a lot many things. And the summary over here captures, it's probably a gist of what happened in that call, but there's a lot that goes into those calls.
Okay. Is there anything else Arun or anybody on the security task force would like to cover today? All right. I will take that as a no. So I guess we will say that we are complete for today. Next week, Bobby will be presenting some of the work that they've been doing in the learning materials working group to come up with some guidelines around documentation. They had a task force going on there, so we'll let Bobby and the team present that to us next week. If there's any other items that people think we should discuss as a TSC, please let me know, and we will make sure to get that on the agenda as well. And with that, I will close out the meeting for today. Thank you all for attending.
Thank you.